On Friday, the Labor Department reported that 113,000 jobs were lost last month. Every day, it seems, we hear new reports of companies laying off workers. Again last week, Motorola announced it was cutting 2,000 jobs. The Hewlett-Packard merger with Compaq could cost 15,000 more. Politicians and economists talk about what all of this means, how long the slowdown in the economy will last, and who's to blame. But if you're one of the thousands of people out of work, the big picture is a little secondary right now. You are out of a job, or maybe your spouse is, or a friend. Becoming unemployed puts you on an emotional roller coaster. Depression, anger, resentment, betrayal, those are just some of the things you may experience. Plus, you've got the pressure of finding a new job, collecting unemployment insurance, meeting the expectations of your family and friends, feeling a little bit embarrassed. It can all chip away at your self-esteem. And what do you do with all that time on your hands? Today on Talk of the Nation, surviving unemployment. If you've been out of work, what advice can you offer? What did you do to get through this period in your life? If you're out of work now, please call and tell us what your problems are. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Now we're joined by NPR business correspondent Jim Zeroli to tell us about the latest unemployment news. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Neil.
What segments of the economy were hit hardest in this latest downturn, for example? I mean, we continually, you know, think these are all, you know, dot-comers, 26-year-old geniuses getting thrown out of work. Who's losing their jobs?
Well, maybe a place to start is by saying that the total number of jobs on U.S. payrolls in March was 132,650,000. Now, that was at its peak. In August, it fell to 132,300,000. So there are now 320,000 fewer jobs than there were in March. And this doesn't include self-employed people. It doesn't include people who work off the books. Mm-hmm. Now, where have the job losses been? The answer is manufacturing. We have lost 1 million jobs in manufacturing in 13 months. Just about every area of manufacturing, textiles, aerospace, telecommunications, they've all been hemorrhaging jobs. Now, these jobs losses have been offset by gains elsewhere in government, in financial services, retailing, healthcare. They've weakened a bit, but they've all been basically adding jobs. But when you look at the manufacturing jobs, along with that, mm-hmm. There's been a net loss of jobs.
And the one would think the transition from manufacturing jobs to these growth areas that you're talking about is not necessarily an easy one.
No, for the economy. The thing about manufacturing is the manufacturing has not really been growing very much for years. We have mainly because a lot of companies have become a lot more productive. They don't have to hire as many people as they did at one time. They can do more with the same amount of people. So we haven't really had much growth in manufacturing jobs. The growth has been elsewhere. Now what is happening is we are losing jobs in manufacturing.
Let me ask you about two numbers that came out on Friday. The employment rate went up 0.4% in August, an historically large jump. Yet the percentage of people out of work is still historically low, is it not?
Yes. It is... I remember a time when there were people who were saying you can't have 6% unemployment or you can't get below 6% unemployment without touching off inflation.
Structural unemployment, yeah.
Right, exactly. You may remember in 1993 the unemployment rate was 7%. There was an interesting figure in the Wall Street Journal today. They said that between January 1974 and April 1997, the unemployment rate never fell below 5%. Well, in the past few years, in the late 90s, that changed. It kept falling, kept going down. We got to 3.9% last October. Now we've come back up again, but it is still low. What is remarkable And what is kind of distressing too is the speed of the losses. We're back up a full percentage point in a very short period of time. And there are a lot of economists who would say you just can't have that kind of a rise without a recession coming along.
And let me ask you a question to which you may not have the answer. I certainly don't. I mean, you talked about the speed with which this happens. Is American business more ruthless? I mean, are these jobs going to get whacked more quickly than they might have been 10 years ago?
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer. I know that certainly businesses have an incentive not to lay people off, but certainly to make it look like they're laying people off, because that's kind of what Wall Street wants to see.
They're investors, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Okay, Jim, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. NPR's business correspondent, Jim Zaroli. Now, joining us now are our guests. Kate Wendleton is the president of the 5 O'Clock Club, a national career counseling and outplacement organization, which is based in New York. And welcome to Talk of the Nation. Hello.
Being here.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Hi, great being here.
Oh, good. Also with us is Ruth Lubin. She's a psychotherapist in private practice in Santa Monica, California, and the author of Are You a Corporate Refugee? A Survival Guide for Downsized, Disillusioned, and Displaced Workers. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks, Neil.
We want to hear your experiences. What are you doing now, or what have you done in the past to get yourself through a period of unemployment? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And Kate Wendleton, let me begin by asking you, you've been in this business for 25 years. What are the typical psychological effects that people who are out of work go through?
Well, people often feel like they will never, ever work again, regardless of how successful they've been in the past. And, of course, part of what we want to do is help them get a long-term perspective, help them keep panic at bay, is a phrase that we use all the time. And we have lots of little techniques that we ask people to follow.
And just briefly, some of them might be?
Well, for example, we want to make sure that you said how much time should a person be spending on their job search. If a person's unemployed, we expect them to be spending 40 hours a week. If they are employed, and half of our people coming in are employed and feel like they're going to be losing their jobs, they should be spending 15 hours a week on their search in order to get their momentum going. So that's their job right now, is to get another job. We want them to have 3 hours worth of fun a week, whether they like it or not, is our little joke, so they can stay calm and feel like a normal person and talk about the U.S. Open or the latest movie when they go on these job interviews. Shall I give you some other hints as well?
Well, you might as well.
Okay. If a person is at a three-month mark in their search and they've been looking that long, that is a long, long, long time, then we want them to get a completely fresh start. Act like this is the first day of your search. Re-examine everything that's been going on. We want people to have a buddy, another 5 o'clock clubber, who they talk to every single day about what they're doing in their search, what they plan to do this day, and then they check with that person to make sure that they did do it the next day.
Ruth Lubin, you write that people fresh out of work go through a series of emotional stages as well. Can you describe some of those?
Absolutely. I think it starts with what I call being on the brink while people are still at work, but the rumor mill is getting stoked and daily headlines are warning them or scaring them that their jobs may go away. But once the pink slip comes, the stage called letting go can be the most paralyzing. And that's the point at which we're in this kind of denial or disorientation about the fact that people who are losing their jobs these days are not responsible for the job loss. It's like we made our numbers, we did our best, we've gotten a great big fat raise maybe a couple of months ago, but still the job went away. So there's a lot of disorientation and paralysis that, in my opinion, takes several stages of conscious effort to move through. So I focus much more on the emotional piece that you introduced this segment with. Mm-hmm. But I also believe that we're being given a lot of to-dos by career counselors that make us feel that we should get right back on the path immediately. And if we're too paralyzed to do a 40-hour-a-week job search, it's hard not to personalize the job loss in the first place. And then if you're not doing the job search correctly, you really feel like a loser. So my focus is the emotional impact is not to be minimized. And there are some definitive strategies you can use to move through it.
We want to hear your stories at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And Andrew's on the line with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hello, Neil.
Hi.
Thank you for your time.
Sure.
I work in Portland, Oregon, and I work in the tech sector, and Oregon and Portland particularly has a pretty hot tech market, or until recently. And I work in marketing and advanced marketing and graphic design for these tech companies. And 8 months or so ago, I quit at my last company, and I thought I would just move on to another company with better options and better rate of success. And I took a month-long vacation in Europe, and I came back, and things are entirely different than when I left. And since then, I've been looking for another full-time position, and it's been an incredible ordeal to go through.
What has been the most difficult thing for you?
I think the most difficult thing for me has definitely been the way this has changed my relationship with my friends and all those people around me.
Because you used to be a peer, a colleague.
Exactly. And now I'm the unemployed friend.
And probably you feel a loss of identity, a loss of purpose, a loss of a sense of who you are because your role has been taken away and everyone else seems to have a role.
Yep.
Andrew, is it a little bit like that, you know, if you break up with your girlfriend, all you can see is other couples, and if you lose your job, all you see is people, you know, walking off to work and doing wonderful and exciting things?
Yeah, it's exactly like that.
And people, you know, the only question they have for you, so you going back to work?
Yeah, the question that, well, and you actually, or for me, you start evading those people because you know that question's going to come up and you haven't figured it out yet. And, you know, you don't have a new position, but that's the only question that they can really ask you is not how things are going at work or is how's the job search going? And if it's not going well, then you've answered the same question 1,000 times a day.
And self-destructively, because those may be the very people who might say, you know, we've got a position opening up in our, you know, marketing department.
Exactly.
Right. And can I just jump in here for a second, Neil?
Go ahead.
This is Kate. Actually, a lot of the 5 o'clock clubbers who come in feel exactly the same way until they get in the group and then they see that everybody's in the same boat. And they feel like I felt the same way myself when I was unemployed a very long time ago. I thought I was the only one in New York who was not working. We say to people, and I know that this might not sound so psychological, and I am not a psychologist, and Ruth is just terrific at what she does, I know. We say you'll feel better when you get that next job. And what we want people to do, once they get over that initial hurdle of having lost their job, is to have a real productive way to spend that time, that job search time, and they can see the progress in their search, and they do start to feel better. And they can say to the people, don't worry about it. I'm in great hands right now. I'm being taken care of very well. And I am so optimistic about what's going on in my job search. I have taken a turn in the right direction. And so that way you're not shooting yourself in the foot where people start seeing you as a loser. And they start to breathe a sigh of relief. Thank God he's back on the right track again. And then they don't feel so responsible. And they're happy to then go to the movies with you and do that sort of thing. So ours is a very proactive kind of approach, doing the right things in your search. And that way you're not a burden on the other people either.
Yeah, and exactly.
Do you mind if I add something, Ruth, here? One of my goals in writing the book, my primary goal, was to normalize the emotional craziness that you're going through right now. And I think what's important to me is that you understand the predictable emotions. You're experiencing them. Everyone experiences them. And frankly, some of the questions and reactions you're getting from friends and ex-colleagues is their own projected fear of being in the same position that you find yourself in right now. So you're not separate from everyone else. You just need, I agree with Kate, to get some support.
Andrew, thanks very much for your call. The only piece of advice I can give you is skip that daytime TV. It'll kill you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. 113,000 jobs were cut in August, one of them yours. We're talking about surviving unemployment. We'd like to hear from you. Tell us what you're doing to get by. My guests are Kate Wendleton, president of the 5 O'Clock Club, a national career counseling and outplacement organization, and Ruth Lubin, a psychotherapist and the author of Are You a Corporate Refugee? A Survival Guide for Downsized, Disillusioned, and Displaced Workers. To get in on the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-TALK, or zap us an email at totn@npr.org. Now let's get back to the phones, and Norm joins us on the line from Berkeley, California.
Hello, Neil.
Hi.
I agree with your guests, Kate and Ruth. You have to develop a strategy. I was unemployed from 95 till 97. I was a group home administrator, and they did a shutdown. The corporation shut our group home down.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at a loss because it was my world for 6 years. And what I was able to do is I went back to school. And while I was in school, I got a chance to go on medical mission to Papua New Guinea for about 30 days. When I came back, I was refreshed. I had a whole new global view of the world. And I was able to actually discover some jobs in the college or university area, research jobs that are part-time jobs, but they pay very well. And I've been doing that since 98.
So in a sense, some options opened up for you.
Yes, they did. And basically, I'd be able to continue my education and do the research jobs and stay employed, basically.
Ruth Lubin, is it a wise move to sometimes, you know, step back, reevaluate, try new
Absolutely.
Things?
Absolutely. And I think what Norm is sharing with us is a values clarification that occurred, a really deep self-assessment and soul-searching that occurred by stepping out of our work-addicted culture that defines us on the basis of our jobs. And that's critical, I think, for self-esteem. You need to recognize who else you are besides of your job and your roles, and what you did was powerful.
Yeah, because I found myself in a deep depression, you know, that I couldn't break through the normal, you know, ways of doing things. And all my friends and relatives wanted to help me, and I got all the lectures and stuff, and it was just overwhelming. So it's like, okay, I need to do something drastic here.
Norm, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but the way a lot of us respond to our jobs, it's almost like family, and losing it is a little like grief.
Exactly. It was like a major divorce or something took place, you know.
It sounds like, this is Kate here, it sounds like Norm was doing a bit of a self-assessment and stepping back and finding out what he wanted to do long-term and what it is that he enjoyed doing and also did well. Neil, one of the exercises that we encourage people to do in a more formalized basis than what Norm did, because not everybody can do what Norm did, is what we call the 7 stories exercise.
Oh, wow.
And it's listing your accomplishments, things that you've done in the past that you've enjoyed doing and have also done well.
Don't we call that a resume?
No, because lots of times the things on your resume are not the things that you enjoy doing and also did well. It may be, for some people, work-related things were not the things they enjoy doing. So what you want to do is brainstorm 25 accomplishments, things you enjoy doing, really enjoy doing, and also did well. Pick out the top 7 and rank them and say, here were the best things. This was the most important and enjoyable accomplishment of my life. Here was the second best. And then analyze them and see what are the threads that run throughout them. And that way you have a chance of saying, first of all, you feel better about yourself. You see the accomplishments. But also, then you know that you want to repeat in the future those things that you found enjoyable. And so that's the starting point for a lot of our clients, is to, if they try to skip that exercise, they do not do as well in their search, because this makes them feel better. It gives them some grounding for what they're looking for in the future, and it is a very important first step.
Norm, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go now. Dan. Dan joins us on the line from Little Rock, Arkansas.
That's correct.
Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. I was just thinking that perhaps some of the people who are just finding themselves out of work, maybe if they find an actor friend who they can talk to. Actors you find are mostly out of work most of the time anyway. So
or waiters, rather, sometimes work acting.
Well, indeed. But I think they do run into many of the same concerns. I think they get used to it. I don't know whether it's the passion for acting or, you know, what the situation, what the differences might be, but, they find a way to survive, to be able to do what they really love to be doing, so.
I'd love to respond to that. This is Ruth. I think one of the problems we get into working for a company is having handed our power, so to speak, over to the company, to the employer, and feeling that they have our best interests and our well-being at heart. And what you're describing is more of having learned to internalize that locus of control. If you take time between jobs and you do the self-assessment we're talking about, you do the healing and you do the redefinition of who you are, you'll be able to operate as a free agent, you know, like world-class athletes who are cut from a team. They have to remember their peak performance and come from the inside out, and that's what you're describing that actors
that's
do.
That's absolutely, absolutely correct. I haven't always been an actor. I was a university professor for 15 years and had the luxury of the paycheck every 2 weeks or whatever, and moving into acting was a big change, and I think what you just described is what I went through. The transition for about a year was just really difficult.
Well,
and in fact,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. No. This is Kater. In fact, what we do at the 5 o'clock Club is we tell people to think of themselves as actors who are just trying to land another gig, and it will not last forever.
Right.
And
you
will have to take another one after that.
That's a very important point as far as actors are concerned too.
And acting, the idea of unemployment is intrinsic to acting. Every actor expects to be unemployed.
Absolutely.
And it's part of you talk to other actors. And there's no ignominy, there's no embarrassment in being out of work. Gielgud was out of work.
Exactly.
All right, Dan.
But when Gielgud was working, he was making more than most of us at the time, so you could put more away.
But when he was working, you couldn't see it.
Neil, could I throw one more thing in here?
Please
this
do.
Is Ruth
thanks,
again.
Dan.
I think when we encourage people to think as actors or think proactive, there's a kind of mind over matter expectation that a lot of people have a difficult time doing. I believe you have to work through the emotional swamp that's in there. Just as converting from being a corporate employee to being an actor took him a year. For most of us, it takes a period of time to move from feeling one way to being able to feel and think a different way. So if people feel they're doing this, they're doing these affirmations, why don't I feel better? It's because it's process work. It's not just mind over matter.
Scranton, Pennsylvania is one part of the country that's seen more than its fair share of layoffs. Nearly 2,000 people there lost their jobs over the past 6 months. One of them is Stephanie Jocelyn, who worked at the Corning factory that closed there last month. She's still trying to figure out what to do next.
I work as a waitress in a restaurant in the area, just job after job after job that had no opportunity to move up. I mean, we hear the amount of pay raises that we got just in the 1 year. I went from making, you know, around $10 to making $14 within 1 year. I mean, everybody's going to be out looking for jobs, and there's not a lot out there. I mean, other than working in another manufacturer, you're not going to find the wages.
Joining us now is Jim Santorsa, the operations manager of the Scranton, Pennsylvania Compensation Service Center. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. It's Joe.
It's Joe, excuse me. The area, your area around Scranton has taken a big hit job-wise. Two other companies, in addition to Corning, laid off workers or closed altogether. So I imagine you hear a lot of stories like Stephanie's.
It's very very difficult for them. It's much like Ruth was saying as I was listening that, they're shocked, they're bewildered. They have no idea. They just have no idea where to pick up the pieces. It is very much a grief kind of thing when they lose their jobs.
Now, anger can be expressed in many different ways. The Thompson TV Picture Tube Company that employed over 1,000 people near Scranton moved to Mexico, I guess, for cheaper labor. I assume you've encountered anger specifically about that at the Scranton Unemployment Office.
Absolutely. And, we're prepared for that. We have to go out on rapid response teams to the plant to meet with them and make the transition as easy as we can. And it's sometimes directed at us. It's sometimes directed at their management staff. But we sort of have to work through that. And in particular with Thompson, yes, there was a lot of anger over NAFTA and how that affected their lives.
Now, I am pleased to say that it has been some years since I've been out of work. Few decades, in fact, but the last time I had to go to the unemployment office, it was a little like being examined to see if you were human at all, a cold woman behind walls of glass gave me the fisheye and decided that I was barely eligible for unemployment compensation and then said, be back every week. I gather things have changed.
Dramatically, yes. I think my father and my uncles and aunts who went into employment offices when I was a child, expressed the same kind of reaction that you just did.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that in two very important areas, we've tried to improve our delivery of services. And one is in technology. We've now consolidated into 6 and soon in October to be 8 call centers that have now consolidated what was near 80 regular unemployment offices. You don't see us in person anymore except when we do go out to the plants. However, it has improved the speed and the accuracy of our delivery of services, and it makes it more comfortable to call from your home to file the claim because the stigma of standing in an unemployment office isn't there. Another area we've put a lot of effort
briefly, how do you just make sure it's the right person?
Well, how did we know in person? It really doesn't matter. I didn't know who was standing in front of me anyway.
I couldn't have lied to that woman. My
really?
Life depended
really?
On it.
Well, we weren't routinely looking at driver license IDs or anything, but we have cross-checks with our computers, and employers tell us who should be collecting and who should not.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy to find. The second area that we've tried to improve on greatly, especially in the last 5 years, is to look at the claimant as a customer and our customer service focus, so that we try to make what is a difficult situation at least make the application process as easy as it could be. So we offer them a lot of options on how to file and to protect their privacy.
In other words, they can file by email or using those techniques?
They can file over the Internet in Pennsylvania. As a matter of fact, 17% of our claims as we speak are being filed on the Internet. They can file with an agent on the phone. One of our customer reps could help them on the phone. They can fax in an application, or they can mail in an application.
Now, when I was unemployed, a lot of the emphasis at the unemployment office was on enforcement. Was I out there looking for a job? Did I still qualify? Had I done too much work to collect unemployment insurance that week?
Well, we are still partnered with what we call the Team Pennsylvania Career Links here in Pennsylvania. We don't like to intimidate claimants and saying, "Well, we're going to take your check away if you're not going to look for work." But we do have a focus on reemployment services. And one of the last questions we ask when we take an application is, "Do you want to talk to a Team Pennsylvania Career Link representative?" And the codes and things we enter into a claim also goes into their data bank. So when employers are looking for applicants, that information is readily available for them.
You also said something interesting, that when you meet the clients, except when you go out to the plants. Tell me about that.
Well, as part of the Warren Act, Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act, we're required to go out when there is 50 or more people laid off and we're notified of that layoff. And they're partnered with this other social service agencies that are in the community. We go and try to offer them the whole range of services that, as you said, being employed for 30 years and never having this experience, they're unaware of the services mm-hmm. that are out there. So we go out into the community, especially unemployment and Team Pennsylvania Career Link, to try to let them know that there are retraining services, that the unemployment compensation process does not have to be taxing, as you described it,
mm-hmm.
and that this can be we could take a little bit of the sting out for them, and they see they could put a face on the agency. And we can give them a number to call if they're having any difficulties.
One very quick question, Joe. How many weeks of unemployment compensation do you get now in Pennsylvania?
In Pennsylvania, it's 26, and that's fairly uniform across the country.
Thanks very much, Joe.
Okay.
Joe Santorsa is operations manager of the Scranton Compensation Service Center, and he spoke to us from his office in Taylor, Pennsylvania. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we are talking about being out of work and the emotional baggage that comes with it. Call us with your tips and suggestions on making it through, or you can continue the conversation online. Go to npr.org, click on the discussion session, and then scroll down to Talk of the Nation. Go back to the phones, and Grant joins us on the line from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Hello. I would hope to give the fellow unemployed both a glimmer of hope and also a challenge in my comments as I share my experience. I've been unemployed since the first week of February this year. And along the way, I have moved twice to two locations, spent some time up in Alaska. But along the way, have found someone that I love dearly and was able to move down to Flagstaff, Arizona, and support her as she begins graduate school, something that I'm sure I was wouldn't have been able to do had I been...
Support her more than emotionally.
Certainly not financially. but something that I would not have been able to do had I been wrapped up in my professional career in Seattle. So I encourage those listening to look to those areas and remember that there are opportunities that aren't available when you are employed. At the same time, I've spent many hours researching, reading, investigating and inquiring about our economy and who is benefiting. Who are the companies that are doing well through this economy? What are the causes of them? And as I go to look for them, I find major mergers, massive mergers across the country since 96 that have made large corporations, huge international corporations, and I challenge those to ask themselves the question, is that good for the American people? How are we in a situation now because of those mergers that has helped many of us in our job searches and in our employment? As you do that, I encourage you to seek out nonprofit media organizations like NPR and also indiemedia.org.
We're the growth sector of the industry? That's a little sad. Kate Wendleton, this seems like excellent advice. Scope out the market and see who might be hiring.
Well, first of all, I just want to comment on the first thing that Grant said. We have so many job hunters who said that they saw this after they got over the initial thing and worked with Ruth or somebody like that, who saw this as a great opportunity to get their weight in shape, who started exercising, who took care of family problems, who decided to spend 4 hours a week going to art museums when everybody else was working, and said, well, what can I get out of this situation that's good? Certainly, what Grant is suggesting is a great thing, is to say, you know, what are the growth areas in the market, and can I latch on to one of those areas if this is right for me? And we encourage people to go after growth areas. You know, there are plenty of jobs left in manufacturing, but if it's retrenching and retrenching and retrenching, chances are you're going to lose your, more likely to lose your job in those areas that are retrenching. So certainly going after the growth areas is a smart, smart thing to do.
And one Ruth? More suggestion, Ruth, here. My belief is that job seekers should compartmentalize their job search to just 4 hours a day. And the other part of the day needs to be about exercising, getting enough sleep, learning how to eat in healthy ways. But I suggest doing focused wandering. Get out of the house. Art museums are great, but do things that don't cost money. And reclaim your hobbies, the other parts of your lives that were, you know, that there was no time for when you were working or overworking. And I see a lot of people finding jobs in unorthodox ways during the time that they're out there wandering, whether they're doing photography classes or going to the beach and or stumbling into people or talking to people at the cafe while they write in their journals. I really think that that is, it's counterintuitive, but it's often more productive than sitting at the computer or, you know, pounding out those resumes 8 to 10 hours a day.
Grant, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
And just hope it doesn't fill up all of your time. Tomorrow at this time, faith-based prison programs. Do they work, and do they discriminate against prisoners who aren't Christians? Today we're talking about how to survive the demoralization of being laid off and how to bounce back. Our guests are Kate Wendleton, president of the 5 O'Clock Club, a national career counseling and outplacement organization, and Ruth Lubin, a psychotherapist, the author of Are You a Corporate Refugee? A Survival Guide for Downsized, Disillusioned, and Displaced Workers. To join the conversation, give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us on the line, Rebecca in Corvallis, Oregon.
Hi. I just wanted to say that this is a good time to call on our friends as resources. When I was in a stage where I was out of work, sharing meals, sharing childcare, offering up non-financial services was really helpful since we didn't have the money to spend.
Was this in the sense of having something successful to do or also useful in terms of barter?
A nice barter system. And yeah, it's great, too, so when you do have a job opportunity, you don't have to go for the high-paying jobs.
Kate Wendleton, I assume that's one of your first pieces of advice. Network with your friends.
Network with your friends and certainly join a job hunt support group so you're there with other job hunters, too, who are in the same boat. The other thing that Rebecca reminds me of is assessing your financial situation. A lot of people get very panicky thinking that they must get a job by Monday because of their financial situation. And we want them to write down what is their backup plan, how long can they last, just so that they can keep their emotions at rest there. What are some of the stopgap things you would do? Take in a roommate, sell your furniture, take out a loan. I'm not saying that you need to do these things, but if you can write these things down and know that you're not going to wind up homeless, it makes people feel a lot more calm during their job search.
So, Rebecca, is your couch on eBay?
No. Actually, we did. My husband and I do live with two roommates.
Ah, okay.
That's great. I have one more thing to add to what Rebecca is saying, that when friends are essential and wonderful, but there is spillover into family when there's job loss. And I think it's critical to get family on board just as much as friends. And there's some huge issues that can surface when family don't understand what the unemployed person is going through.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go. Thomas now joins us from Portland, Oregon.
Thomas?
Yes, it's you.
Oh, hi. I hate to put the cloud of doom over the whole discussion here. There are a lot of us out here unemployed who are facing age discrimination simply because we're in, you know, full middle age, and we're actually not getting the unemployment check every month. I mean, we're not going to go to the museums. We're not going to go and do our hobbies, and we're not going to think about careers or corporate structure or anything. I was talking to my employment counselor the other day, and she's looking at my resume. She says, oh, another cook, painter, carpenter. You guys should form a union. You know, in other words, we're blue-collar workers who are over 50 years old, and we don't look that great. You know, we might show up with a suit and tie on, but we're still, you know, we're not going to look that, we're not going to present ourselves as some young go-getter.
Thomas,
we might be very competent to do the job. You don't get a call back. You don't get hired. You don't get anything. I've been looking for a job for a year. I have pawned everything I own. I've sold everything of value that I own. And I am facing homelessness. In about 10 days or so, I will be homeless. And quite frankly, I'm wondering what's going on. I think age discrimination is illegal, but I'm almost positive that's what's happening.
Age discrimination is a huge problem. We have found in general, now it depends on the field that you're in, and one that's physically oriented is maybe a bigger problem. We have found that people who are 50 to 55 are taking only a week longer to get a job than the people who are under 50. And what we try to say to people, although I know that age discrimination is a problem, so I'm not saying it's not, what we try to say is, if it were not your age, can you think of something else that might be wrong? You know, one thing that we like people to do is to go into prospective employers who are not hiring right now and say, if you had an opening, would you consider hiring someone like me? And if they say yes, that's the best you can do in your job search. And what we want people to do is to come up with 20 people who say, if you had an opening right now, would you hire someone like me? And they say yes. And then you stay in touch with them so that you're not facing competition. That is, if you talk to places only when they have an opening, by definition, they're talking to other people younger than you, people who have the kind of experience that they want. And so what we suggest is going into places that are not hiring right now and saying, would you consider hiring me? And then staying in touch with them every 3, 4, 5 weeks or so. This works very well in blue-collar jobs.
Wouldn't that be nice if I had a telephone and an address?
Yeah, you know, you've got a lot of problems. That's a separate issue. But for example, let me just tell you,
it's where at least 40% of homeless people come from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have another
about
suggestion.
60% of them are insane, or they're drug addicts. And you know, I don't fit into either of the above categories. I'm just 52 years old, and I look every minute of it.
I have one other suggestion. This is Ruth here. Since you do have an employment counselor, and I have to say I do agree with you that it's not your imagination. There's definitely age bias out there.
Blue-collar workers.
Blue-collar workers. Across all of the industries. But you do have an employment counselor, and I'm wondering about retraining. There are many
training. How am I supposed to get retraining when I can't? I don't even have a home. I'm going to be living in a pup tent, for Christ's sakes.
There are charities that you could resource and possible grants for. You'd have to identify what you're willing to learn, but you're never too old to learn. And there are some amazing training programs out there. If you have a counselor, it would be a good place to begin.
Well, I speak three languages, and I don't think I'm going to be able to...
You know, going along with what Ruth just said, the unemployment offices often have... retraining programs associated with them. And so I know that you're very discouraged right now, but one thing you might consider is finding out if the unemployment office is offering retraining programs, going along with what Ruth just said, in those areas that are more high growth. We just had a woman right now. I know.
So I get up out of my pup tent.
We had a woman right now
who. I stuff into my bag and wander down to the unemployment office and then take this retraining course.
It might work.
And it might.
Absolutely. We had a woman who had been unemployed who had been homeless for 2 years. A terrible, terrible story. And we do meet these people. And she's back on her feet now and everything is just fine. But she had been homeless for 2 years and working in consulting jobs, you know, off and on kind of work during that time. Now she's stable. Now she has her own apartment. She commutes 2 hours to her job. But she had been homeless for 2 years. And I'll tell you, she was very depressed.
What a brave person. Yes. My hat's off to her.
Thomas, we all wish you the best of luck.
Well, luck is all it's going to be because it's looking pretty bleak right now, dude.
I'm sure it is. Okay.
Well, hang in there.
Yeah.
All right. Bye. Thanks for the call. Now let's go to Eugene, who's on the line from Bremerton, Washington.
Hi.
Hi.
I can only hope that this fellow doesn't, lose faith because...
You're talking about Thomas, the guy we were just talking to?
Yeah. I am 48, and I look 52. I'm unemployed presently. I do have a little bit of a margin between me and being homeless, but I took the opportunity. I've been without a job since April. To go ahead and improve my, you know, my situation at home. I've painted my house and done a few other things like that. And all of a sudden, I find neighbors and other people that are within my circle of friends who are saying, oh, gosh, you're out of work. Can you come over and do this?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after a while, I don't have any time for myself. It's worse than when I have a job.
It sounds like you should be charging them more.
Oh, geez, you can't do that to friends. They support you when you really don't have anything. But, no, they're all very good about it while they're staying employed. And they have the the fluidity. They've got the money that they can go ahead and put into these things, but they do not have the time. And the world is absolutely crying for handymen, and in many cases, people who work under the table. So... I realize you're not getting any more benefit out of your unemployment benefits, and you're not paying into the
Social Security. Yeah.
Yeah, but it does keep one off the street, or if one is on the street, it does keep you in spending money. And I've known quite a few guys. We have a large population of homeless people in the Seattle area, which I'm not very far from, and. These folks are managing to keep their head above water, and in many cases, they finally wind up crawling out altogether and getting themselves resituated by being a little more creative and just saying, you know what, I want to work, and I'm going to go out there and find some place or somebody who needs my skills and will put me to work.
And well, can I just jump in here with...
Only in one second, because I have to say that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now go
Eugene,
ahead.
Yeah. Eugene has terrific advice here about doing whatever it takes to earn some money in the short term. I just want to make one point about older workers, and I hate to say this, but I'm 56. The average American now is planning to work a lot longer. The average American who's 52, most people are planning to work till age 65, 70, 75. And I know the hardship about older people looking for jobs, but there is a labor shortage. And I don't mean to be a Pollyanna about this, but there is a labor shortage. The Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Conference Board both project this labor shortage to continue for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so right now we are in a dip. But that's not the long-term prognosis. And older workers have got to start thinking more long-term as opposed to just living hand-to-mouth, which you need to do in the short run. But also, what is the career that you want to have over the next 15 years? Most older people are going to have to work longer.
Eugene, I can hear you trying to say something, but I'm going to cut you off because we're trying to squeeze in one more call before we have to go.
Thank you very much for your time anyway.
Really appreciate your talk and your inspiration. Now let's go to Joe, who was on the line from Pico Rivera in California.
Yeah, great program.
Thank you.
I was a union representative at an aerospace company, and my division was shut down and put out of business. I also had to counsel my fellow coworkers and union brothers and sisters on what to do. First of all, keep an eye on know what's going on. Get out of debt if you can. You know, pay off as many bills as you can and simplify your lifestyle. You know, you can see it coming. I moved in with my sister, and I'm helping her. She's divorced. I'm helping to raise her three kids. And basically, I took advantage of our job retraining program, and I just graduated as a emergency medical technician in July. And you also got to get in touch with yourself, your own spirituality. I'm Native American, so after I passed my county exams, I took some time, and I went back home to New Mexico and visited the reservation, visited with family, and then came back home. And I also kept myself busy by doing volunteer work. I'm a service-oriented person as far as giving back to people. I've done some volunteer work with the Southern California Indian Center here in L.A. and got involved in some social causes. I'm involved with a farm worker struggle. And, you know, you just got to keep in mind that when one door closes, another door opens. And
Joe, thank you so much for opening the door, but I'm afraid we've run out of time. We really appreciate your telephone call. And we'd like to thank our guests who joined us for our discussion today. Kaith Wendleton is a president of the 5 O'Clock Club, a national career counseling and outplacement organization. She spoke with us from our bureau in New York. Ruth Lubin, a psychotherapist in private practice, the author of Are You a Corporate Refugee? A Survival Guide for Downsized, Disillusioned, and Displaced Workers. She joined us from our Los Angeles bureau. Earlier, we spoke with Joe Santorsa, operations manager at the Scranton Unemployment Compensation Service Center in Taylor, Pennsylvania, and with Jim Zaroli, NPR's business correspondent. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.